This morning I went to Tom Gaisher's. I don't know if you know him. He has a ore running railroad.
Did you say poor?
It's one of those fake layouts, right?
We have no standards. That's why we're here.
Boy, another problem solved, Joe. It just came in.
Seriously?
No.
Well, no. I sent it this afternoon, so I'll resend it later.
You're listening to The Crossing Gate, the official podcast of the Twin Cities Division of the National Model Railroad Association. The topics and discussions are about the world's greatest hobby, model railroading. Here are your hosts, Thomas Gaisher and Ken Zeska. This episode of the Crossing Gate podcast is brought to you by the Model Railroad One Upper Guy. Have you ever posted a photo of your newest train online, only to have the Model Railroad That's Nothing guy reply that he already has one? You talk about your new Empire Builder train at the division meeting, but he already has it in classic and big sky blue paint schemes. You show off your new 484 steamer, and he will tell you that he has a big boy in three numbers. Yes, you can't buy a heritage unit nowadays without some annoying one-upper claiming that he had it before you. Like, are we in some type of model railroad purchasing Olympic event? You show a great way to make pine trees. He will explain the way he does it is much better. You say you own 30 diesels. He will have 50. You say you own 120 freight cars. He will have 240. You say you built a layout that operates and is great looking. He will tell you he has three big boys. Again. Yes, the That's Nothing guy comes standard in all internet forums, Facebook posts, and YouTube comment sections. And remember, if there is not some blowhard, jughead bragging that he has more trains than you, then the one upper at the local club or Facebook group is probably you.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Crossing Gate podcast. Tonight I'm joined by Ken Borowski.
Hello.
Mike Jordan.
Hello.
Joe Binnish.
Good evening.
And William Sampson.
Hello, hello.
We're going to discuss freelance model railroads, and that freelance does not mean free-for-all. And we'll start with you, Joe. You have a freelance railroad of lies. Tell us how you rein in most of your ideas.
Rein in, yeah. So I model really the M and St. L, the Minneapolis and St. Louis, in Minneapolis. And there were a couple of things that I wanted on my railroad that were around the Twin Cities, but they didn't fit on the M and St. L. So logically, I said, I will just acquire those and make them fit my railroad, and I'll call it the Central of Minnesota. Since I like to model F units, I grabbed a bunch of Stewart F units and drilled lots of holes and stuck on parts and sprayed them a gray, and I had them primed and ready to go. And I asked my dear wife, honey, what color should I paint this? And she says, oh, I like purple. And I just about went to N scale then. It worked out great. I enjoy it. It allows me to do the things I want to do and kind of steal some little areas here and there. But I can also throw my M and St. L stuff out there as well. Story is that the Central Minnesota is entirely trackage rights, except for their yards and that kind of thing. Ken asked before we started, well, how do you constrain yourself? And that's, I think, the key. If you're going to freelance, you have to pick a spot and say, this is what I'm doing. This is what the railroad does. Now, what railroads around here, what do they do? And cherry pick what works for those railroads or what you like about those railroads and make that work. For example, Ken, you could say, I'm tired of modeling the Clinchfield. I'm going to call it the Borowski and Southern. But you do Clinchfield things just to, you know, N-scale locomotives would look fine in purple, I think, don't you?
Well, hold on just 1 second. But the Borowski and Southern, is that just to get his reporting marks to be BS?
Well, I was hoping.
Was that intentional?
That would work out pretty good.
I was hoping that wouldn't come up right away. But, you know, let's run with it and see what happens.
Well, so basically what you're saying is even though you're modeling a railroad of lies, you still have to kind of follow a prototypical plan. So it does seem realistic, because you could really go off the rails, I guess, if you just kind of wing everything without following some sort of a prototype.
Yeah. So I model in Minnesota, right? And certain things happen in Minnesota that may not happen in other areas. By looking at the local railroads, the Great Northern, the Northern Pacific, the Soo Line, you know, the MNS if you're desperate, you can look at those things and say, oh, that makes sense. I see why they did that. They have, you know, these certain accoutrements on the locomotives and this kind of cars, and this is the kind of traffic they're going to have, so I need those kind of cars. And it makes your job easier. You don't have to reinvent the entire wheel, just certain spokes of it.
Well, I forget over on your railroad there, because you said your locomotives are purple.
No, plum, sir, plum.
Plum, purple, fuchsia, whatever you got going there. But so what color are the cabooses? I kind of forgot what you have for caboose colors on yours.
Well, the lazy person in me looked at the Walther's cabooses that were the DM&IR ones, and so I grabbed some of those and painted the letterboards black so that you couldn't see the DM&IR lettering. And slapped the Central Minnesota Herald on the side and put a number on it, and away we go. Okay. So that's what I did. My cabooses are yellow.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'm not honest, but that's interesting. The thing is I always feel like when you're dealing with, you know, something that's been fictitious or made up, the believability has to be kind of there. You make up towns. When you're going there and you know somebody that's modeling Minneapolis, well, you know the Minneapolis area. And if you start saying, well, this town is X, Y, or Z, and it's totally fictitious, then the operator in their head starts to have a hard time comprehending where is X, where is Y, where is Z, how do these things tie together, right? So if you're kind of threading together, at least what I'm getting from here, Joe, is that you're threading together some of the reality and then just putting in some of the fictitious.
Yeah, so for example, the switching areas of my layout, the 3rd and 4th Street, those are actual GN alleys that paralleled Washington Avenue, and we used the maps to come up with the industries and the track arrangements. So the people that are over there and they're crying because they can't get the work done because there's not enough space and there's not enough runarounds and et cetera, I always tell them, well, somehow the real crews were able to do this because this is prototype. This is, it's almost, you know, foot to foot. There's maybe a couple more industries here and there, but it's pretty close. So, you know, I took those and acquired them for the Central Minnesota, and we switch them with M and St. L switchers. That is an area in the Twin Cities you can go look at. The Lake Street area is kind of a homage to the Lake Street Trench that the Milwaukee had, you know, just north of Lake Street. And those industries, again, are taken from the Minneapolis industry book, so that there's nothing made up there. They're all industries that really existed in the Twin Cities. And the same thing with my Northeast section has Twin Cities Industries in it. And little switch area for the American hoist job is the same thing. Those are industries from the Twin Cities.
But now I feel like you're extracting, though, from the prototype, because I have seen the track plans of 3rd and 4th Street, and they are pretty darn close to almost a one-to-one representation, which then the track work itself, I think, helps the operator. But then if somebody's really truly going down that freelance road, you know, Mike or Tom or Ken, do you guys see people that don't look at any prototype like Joe has? I mean, I've done the same type of thing, but do you guys ever go into a freelance railroad where everybody's like, well, I just throw this turnout here, I throw that turnout there. They're not maybe giving you runarounds and they're like, well, that's just the way I want to have it. And it becomes almost too gridlocked. Have you guys ever operated on something like that feels frustrating because they've not looked at maybe some more prototypical, or at least have some elements that you might need during operations?
Yeah, I kind of think you need to have some sort of a prototype as a basis somewhere. You know, you can name your towns after like your pet chipmunks and stuff or whatever, but well, like your track work and stuff has to function. So, you know, the best way to do that is to look at a prototype, because like you said, if you just throw down the track at some point, it's just not going to work. But then if you're modeling freelance, well, then you don't really care if it doesn't work or not, because you're modeling freelance.
That's not true. Stop it.
Wow.
I didn't know people had pet chipmunks.
Wow. Well,
maybe hamsters. It's hard to tell. There's a tiny furry thing running around. I don't know what it was.
That might be a mouse. You should probably get that out of the house. Or a rabbit.
No, but, you know, the track plan is the key thing for any any layout. So I think you kind of need to look at a prototype, you know, for the, you know, at least the track plan. It doesn't have to be the town that you're modeling, or you don't have to model a certain place, but you can get a lot of information on how to set something up by looking at a prototype track plan of a industrial area per se.
Okay.
Just so it functions good.
Let me ask Mike a question, because your Santa Maria Valley is a real railroad, and every time I'm over there, I get to operate the packing district somehow. It may be that I've paid people, or that they just want me off by myself where I can't do any damage. But I really enjoy that little, and it's a 4x6, or, you know, was it 6 foot long or 5 foot long? It's a great little switching area and keeps me busy for the whole time. But is that a prototypical track arrangement, or did you make it up, or tell us how you came up with that?
I just made it up. I tried to get as much switching as I could on a 2x6 area. It didn't start out that way, but after operating for a number of years and slowly making improvements, that's the track plan that I'm currently using. I guess you just got to, like Ken said, just slap down track and start switching. And then as people start complaining, then you fix your mistakes. And so, you know, it took a long time to figure out what I needed to do to make that thing not complicated, but interesting to work. Not to pat myself on the back, but that is the one thing that everybody likes doing the best on the railroad. Sort of like your freight house, Joe, you know, that's it.
So better modeling through shaming.
Through shame, yeah, better modeling through shame. But Mike, you designed the packing district based on what the prototype does to the reefer cars in the iced reefer era.
That's correct. In reading a book that showed the track plan of a set of packing areas, these packing plants were one after another on one long spur, or there's a whole cluster of them in one small area. And so there was a lot of turnouts, a lot of short spurs, and like I said, just packing plants and the support industries for those packing plants, like ice docks and fumigation, cleanout tracks and that kind of thing. But if you're doing something freelance, you have to just sort of pick a theme and use that theme on support structures or rolling stock or locomotives. Now, Tom, when you have your railroad of lies, it looks wow, so realistic. And one of the things that I noticed is, one, you never wash your locomotives, and and two is that each locomotive has the same, I'm going to call it support, you know, the same flashers, the same lights, the same horn, you know, the same additions to the locomotive.
And wouldn't they look nice and plumb?
the least power. No, I thank you, Mike. And I think that's part of what I use to sell my story, and by looking at it, even from the prototype, that if you're going to do a freelance railroad, think about the money and the mechanics. And a lot of people don't do that. They're like, oh, I want a train master. I want PA units. I want E units. I want a DD40 because it's cool, right? Well, the Split Rock Mining has all Alcos. So that simplifies the parts. It simplifies the mechanics. Everybody can work on everything. I see some other freelance layouts, you know, and there's an F unit, and then there's an Alco, and then some GE. And I'm like, the mechanics must hate you. You know? It's just, you know, the parts are in the other city or something. And I'm like, I'm not having it. And it's like, well, we all know where the bell is on this engine. We all know what horn goes on it. We all know what the beacon. And as much as a family appearance as that does with the paint and decals and details, but also, like I said, hit up the make and model for your era. You know, there were some crazy days on the prototype when, you know, you'd find three or four different builders on each railroad in the transition era. But towards the end, you know, like I said, all Elcos, you'd find there were no Elcos at the end on the Rio Grande or Western Pacific or Burlington or, you know, They all went to EMD. And even, you know, Mike, going back to you, your railroad's all 70 tonners. You know, I mean, nothing sells the Santa Maria like a pair of 70 tonners dragging these reefers past the Central Valley. And I think that's part of the story, is that you have to realize, is your freelance rich or is it poor? Is it a secondhand? You know, are you trying to, oh, they, you know, we sold off this branch line in Western Minnesota. Well, you're going to have that secondhand SDL 39. And will you be able to get parts for it?
I think what you're saying too, is you have to go at it like you're the actual business owner of that railroad. You have to think, okay, how can I get locomotives, you know, cheap, you know, like you said, at a certain price, and you're going to get them all for parts, so they're all the same. You have to look at it as, you know, from the financial aspect of it, if you actually own the railroad, what's the most logical way to, you know, purchase stuff for the
well, and that's the believability too, right? I mean, I think at the end of the day, it has to be sold believable. I mean, it's not a lie if you believe it. So if you have yourself setting up this railroad, Tom, in your case, you have the Elcos. If you start to sell the whole idea that this railroad only owns Elcos and maybe it might be secondhand equipment, right? So you're not going to be buying stuff brand new. Well, if you're buying stuff secondhand, well, then that might show the financial element of the railroad that you're doing. It might be patch outs. It might be, you know, equipment like that. Well, then you start telling that idea of it is, because I think it's hard for some people to buy into stories if you're all over the board. If you've got all kinds of things going on, they're looking at it going, well, is this an M&S unit or is this your unit? Well, it was an M&S unit, but they bought it. Well, okay, well, it doesn't look like it got purchased. It got purchased if you crossed out the numbers and put on maybe your reporting marks. That at least helps us move along. But it becomes difficult, I think, sometimes to decipher when guys really throw the kitchen sink at us and you're going in as an operator to look at it fresh and to try to understand what you're trying to say. I mean, that's a big part of it. And I think, you know, Tom, obviously you're moving dirt. It's pretty clear. And your Elcos, that's their power. And it's a company. It's not a railroad. So, I mean, there's all kinds of little elements that are happening on yours, but you've stayed pretty true to what you're hauling. You're not like, oh, I guess auto racks got hauled in, you know, on this weekend. Well, guess what? There aren't auto racks on the split rock, but people will do it. And then you're like, well, why? Why? Why would the ore company take on an auto rack?
The window factory right there.
Well, like on Joe's layout, he does all these beautiful custom cars. He's got the fuchsia paint job that looks good and everything. But then he puts the plastic dinosaur animals in the gondola cars and stuff. It just ruins the whole
thing. So that's your, you have N scale dinosaurs printed up that you bring and put into the gondolas. It's not mine. Those are forbidden.
I have grandkids. That's my excuse.
Oh, I see.
But then he's got the track plan on the wall that runs from Houston up to Winnipeg, but he's only modeling like track plan of the 6 foot long.
Yeah, let's bring that up. What do you guys think of that?
Well, it depends how you do it, though. I mean, I say that I'm, you know, this train 21 and 22 are the passenger train that go from Winnipeg to Houston.
That's the Flying Squirrel, right?
No, that's the other one.
Oh,
the flying moose and squirrel.
Yes, there you go. No, Rocky, I think. But anyway,
the moose goes north.
The reason I do that is to give people a sense of, this is a premier passenger train. It's all streamlined. It makes limited stops. It doesn't do any work along the way other than to make, you know, those limited stops. So when it comes through, everything gets out of its way because it's, quote unquote, in a hurry. You know, that's the story you need to sell. Or the idea you need to sell so that people they buy into the job they're doing. So the guy who runs all those through trains on the layout gets to run that, and he runs it differently than the local milk train that comes in and makes all the stops and brings, you know, cream into the butter factory.
You can sell vinyl siding to a guy with a brick house.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, because this is like with the maps of Houston, and you're modeling around Minneapolis. So what part of anything south of Minneapolis, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, down into Houston, shows up on your layout? I mean, why wouldn't you just draw a map to Kansas City? And then, then we hand it off to the Katy or something. Because that's if you're drawing a map, you know, and you got a branch line in California, but you're modeling, you know, Arkansas, how does that affect what's on your layout? How do we know? You know, I don't see a lot of Texas and Pacific cars, so.
No, but there's a passenger car that's on that train that comes from Minneapolis, and the train from St. Paul comes over and brings that sleeper over. It sits for a few hours. Then when that train goes through, it picks up that sleeper to go down to Kansas City, for example, and get set off for the Santa Fe to take out. So that's that part is that car movement is important for the train and the idea of what the train is doing.
Well, I get what you're saying with that, the car movements itself, but I think Tom's looking at just the map itself saying, I'm just going to isolate to this area where, I mean, you could go bigger and say it's Empire, and it's the Empire, yeah, and you're modeling the NP, and all the Elcos are out west. That's where all the mechanics are. Well, then if you're modeling Minneapolis, what are Elcos doing in Minneapolis? Well, there's the period where the merger happened, and they thought they could use them all over the place. Well, the next thing you know, they come through Minneapolis. Now you got some Elcos. And you look at the RS-11s, generally they're up north, and you see them come trickling down. And it was, I think you're right, Tom, in the fact that you say that this is kind of what's happening. But I feel like guys are trying to see a bigger empire of their footprint. And maybe it reaches from Maine and it runs all the way to L.A., but they're only going to choose this little window and that little slice. And they're still trying to tell the whole story of how big the system is. And I think when you do that, it almost becomes a little overwhelming because even when you're looking at a map and a track map, kind of like you're explaining there, Joe, but if you're looking at something, if you're calling yourself in Denver, you might not orientate yourself quite right as the operator going, is this car going north? Is it going south? Is it going east? Is it going west? Because it might even have a fictional name on it that they say is up in Montana or they say is in this other area. And again, the confusion comes back in. Wouldn't you say?
Well, here's the thing. And 2 points I wanted to make from your comments earlier is it's when you freelance like this, you still need to say, I'm going to limit myself to a time period or an era. And it allows you to say, you know what, I don't care about these cars after this era because they don't exist or don't make sense on my layout. So I'm not going to have them. And then you have to look at location and say, I'm going to do the very best job I can of looking at the railroads that are here. And so maybe what I should say is, you know, my train goes down to Houston, but it is set off, you know, in Kansas City with the KD or whatever. And I said it goes by traffic or trackage rights, and you guys are just being mean and picking on me. But, you know, I'm going to label an N-scale car for the Borowski and Southern. It's going to show up on your layout, and you're going to wonder what to do with it. But that's just it. You have to be able to cherry pick, and then you also have to limit yourself when you're freelancing. You got to say, despite the fact that I want to model from Houston to Winnipeg, it doesn't make sense, and there's no point in trying to do the whole thing.
What I heard out of all that, Joe, is when you say freelance, sound more like free balling. You just don't have any underwear on. Nothing's keeping you contained. And, and we're all a little nervous.
Yeah, we're out there, Jerry, and I'm
hands on the table. Hands on the table.
Well, I think if your story, two things, the longer your story is, the more you have to explain to me is the less believable it is.
Ouch.
And also, if your story includes the words eccentric billionaire, then I'm really not going to believe it.
So, at no point did I say that.
You inferred it.
Or self-appointed. Yeah, self-appointed CEO or president.
Eccentric billionaire. Yeah.
No, there's no eccentric billionaires here. I'm too cheap for that.
But I think, Tom, you're right in the fact of simplification. I think simplification goes a long way. I mean, Mike, I think you're a good example in the fact that the Santa Maria Valley is small enough that it's simplified enough you can wrap your head around it. I mean, do you operate on any railroads, Mike, that would be small enough that you can at least encompass what's there, even maybe it's the first time going in or even haven't done it for a number of years?
I guess I've operated on a few small branch lines. I operated on the Split Rock, and that was pretty easy and believable railroad. It didn't take long to catch on that the empty cars went up to the mine and the loaded ones went to the boat. You know, it took me maybe 6 or 7 tries before I figured it out, but, you know.
Might have been too simple for you, Mike.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was used to making sure the magnets kept the cars together and I could make the appropriate noises of the train horn.
You haven't been back in a while. He now has couplers. On the little wooden cars.
Well, how about when you're modeling a freelance layout, you know, picking your industries? That can kind of make or break a layout too. Let's say you put a wood chip plant right next to the paper mill. I mean, that wouldn't be prototypical in the real world, but maybe that's what you want to model. So that could kind of shoot yourself in the foot like that on your layout too. So that's a big thing too. If you don't look at a prototype, you know, area or a scene just to get the right look about it. I mean, but that's based if you want to model a prototype. If you're just putting track down and having stuff for you and your kids to run on, well, that's something totally different. You know, you can put Disney characters on the hills and stuff, kind of like what Joe's got. But
I think the opposite of that might be, yeah, like Joe and his dad, the opposite might be like Greg Dahl, who was carried off. He says, well, I want large industries. And he picked St. Louis because of the automobile manufacturing and the huge brewery. And, you know, then the other line side industries, where his industries play off very well, but he's still working on the story of his Missouri Northern. You know, I mean, we go operate Greg's Layout. We all have a great time. It runs well. It's kind of fun having a 19-car auto rack train.
Yeah.
And it's almost like he doesn't have a story, but he has the layout with the correct industries.
Well, it all makes sense, you know.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
We almost don't need a real grand story at that point.
Yeah.
Because I think when he operates the auto industry, in my opinion, I'm learning more about the auto industry, and he has you putting, you know, all you're looking at is, you know, going to maybe be transmissions, hoods, you know, carburetors, whatever is in the box cars. He wants them in a certain order because that's the way the plant would have received them. And then that starts to me become, oh, I'm learning more about an auto industry than I am his railroad. I know I got to go back to the yard and I got to go get cars, but outside of that, and then you think next time you go over there, I'm going to run the brewery. Next time you're going to go over there, you're going to run the industry district. That type of stuff to me, it's simplification. I don't really need to know much of what his railroad's story may be. And he can add that in obviously as it goes, but I feel like a lot of the story is told doing each industry because you're learning what each industry actually does.
Well, so he completely ignores the beyond the basement part because there's no functioning yard in the sense that the cars don't go out. There's no train that gathers the cars and goes to staging, right? The cars are just in the yard and you show up with your industry job and magically, you know, Ken Zeska hasn't buried your cars in behind, you know, 19 auto racks, so you can get out and do your work. And so it doesn't matter. You bring back the cars and you know, the 15 cars or 500 cars. It doesn't matter.
Well, that's the thing too. His layout's fairly large size, but he's got three main operational areas. Each one of those could be a layout in itself in a person's basement or a spare room. So you could model one industry and it can be a whole layout if you're modeling like a shelf layout or something like his auto plant there. It's probably got five or six spurs going into different buildings and stuff. That could be somebody's whole layout in itself, just one industry, which is kind of a neat concept too. It just comes out of a staging yard and goes to one big industry and you got 20 cars in your train and you're there for an hour and a half switching out the one industry.
And I think like Mike Jordan, I'll go to you because you do this so well. Like Greg, it really doesn't matter if we're using Milwaukee Road or Rock Island Power. But for you, you know, it's like, okay, we're going to move perishables out of Central California. So you have to have, I think, all these PFE reefers. You have to have these, you know, these orange reefers and these certain cars and things for your story. And I think that's what sells your industry. So, I mean, how much influence does that play on you picking what industries else you want on your layout?
The whole railroad is based around moving PFE reefers. It's an agricultural area, so I would say half the car movements are moving refrigerator cars, and the other half are loads that support the agricultural industry. Okay, exactly. I was trying not to say carrot seeds or GE 70 tonners. You know,
yes, those are going to both be banned from the podcast.
Oh, come on.
Mike's not going to be able to talk much then.
Yeah.
I'm not very as seldom as it is.
But that goes back to Greg's railroad with industries that are big enough to be their own railroads. That's what the Santa Maria does, is it's a branch line, and it just works central around these movements of PFE reefers, just like the Ford plant or the brewery or any of the others. So that's part of, and I think Joe hit upon it, not knowing he was making an intelligent statement.
Oh, yeah.
But,
well, I'd like to hear what I said now.
Yeah, yeah. If I could only remember.
the rewind button.
Is that when you pick this fictitious railroad, you got to think about what air you want to model. So if you're modeling 1960, you're not going to have a covered auto rack on your railroad, or, you know, a 70-foot triple bottom hopper car. It helps you decide what you're going to spend your money on and makes you think about what they actually did in that era. You know, what locomotives did they use? What cars were on the railroad? I mean, 60s are nice because you still have a caboose and you can, you know, custom paint cabooses and locomotives purple if you wanted.
Plum. I said plum. Plum.
Well, that's assuming that you're trying to model prototypically. A lot, you know, maybe not everybody does that too. They just see a shiny blue steam engine or something in the hobby shop window and want to pull auto racks with it, and they're happy with that, you know. It's like,
I think that's different if you're going to just have a layout. You know, the guys that just have a layout to run and enjoy this hobby probably a lot more than we do, Billy. Good for them. I don't, you know, I don't care. I know dozens of guys like that that just love this hobby, having a Santa Fe Blue Goose pulling a double stack train. Good for them. But I think if you're trying to get a freelance across as somewhat realism, you're trying to tell a story, then you want to kind of follow more guidelines.
But that goes back to your simplification again, Tom. I mean, you didn't pick a 7-color paint scheme. I mean, you look at the Allagash, you look at the VNO, you look at these guys that did that simplification, and it really is, but it goes back to the prototype again, right? I mean, yeah. The BNSF in some ways could be kind of an outlier in the fact that they went to the multicolored scheme that they had with, you know, the gold piping to try to divide the colors, kind of Great Northern-esque. And you look at what CP has done. You look at what the prototypes have done with the Kansas City and Southern. They kind of got a little bit fancy for a while. But if you look at some of their older schemes, it was all white with a big red KCS. You know, UP has kind of held tried and true. They just do their yellow, gray, and red stripe. That's a simple enough scheme. But even a lot of the freelance trying to sell it get almost too carried away. Like, I want to put safety stripes on the end. Well, they didn't have safety stripes in the 50s. Well, they don't have cabooses in the 90s either, but they decided to keep cabooses. And that whole conversation of back and forth of what's believable almost goes back to, if you want to make it believable, if that's your goal, then you do have to, or at least want to try to simplify, because you can look at a lot of the stuff, like some of the main manufacturers are putting out false or former roads in modern equipment. So Milwaukee Road equipment, that or Rock Island equipment,
right?
And they're doing the SD70 Max, and they're doing the stuff that never would have existed. But at the same time, it appeals to somebody because they're maybe Milwaukee Road fans, but they also like the modern equipment. Well, now you've pivoted yourself into something that said, well, that didn't exist, but Athern or Scale Trains or whoever's producing it has made something that actually could almost be believable. And then you're starting to blur that line. Is that of interest to anybody? I mean, do you guys like the stuff, even that some of these new modern equipment with old, you know, 60s or 70s era, you know, railroads? Or is that just kind of lame?
Well, I guess that's the key there. You know, do you want to be a prototypical modeler or just be a model railroader? Because then you can do whatever you want. So,
well, I think Mike Sophie did a great job. He's a local operator here in the Twin Cities. He does a ore railroad, but what he did is he said the Northern Pacific never went into BNSF and they stayed a standalone railroad. And he painted out the Main Streeter passenger train on modern equipment. It's just beautiful. He really sold the story with this modern equipment painted in the NP green. So you can, where's David? How come David's not here? We need his time geographical bender.
That's right. Yeah, we need a time bender. He's DeLorean.
Yeah, so
he got caught in a time loop, and we won't be seeing him anymore.
Yeah. If you do this freelance, and you can come up with a believable idea, and you carry it through, just like Tom with his same horn on every railroad or every locomotive, and everything is just a pale yellow or a nice fuchsia painted passenger train, you know? it can be believable, just like Will was saying that, you know, this, you know, brand new Milwaukee locomotive, you know, that I'm sure there's some Milwaukee nut that I guess that's redundant, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Why are you repeating yourself?
Yeah.
Well, they wouldn't make them if people weren't buying them. So that's
right. Yeah. Part of
it too. Yeah, well, that's just it. So I think the T-shirt for this podcast is, it's plum, damn it.
Plum, damn it, yeah. I'll never change. So overall, we'll end it up here. Tell us what advice, someone is going to start their layout, but they want a freelance. What advice would you give them? Ken, what would you tell them real quick?
I would say to at least, I mean, you don't have to model a prototype, but at least follow some prototype standards just to make your freelance layout a little bit more believable. So, you know, track plans and things like that. You can name it whatever you want, but at least follow some sort of a prototype just so it makes sense, I guess.
Like the industries we talked to. Research the industries, and those are correct. Okay. Yeah. And Mike, what would you tell someone? Not to paint anything plum? Is that what you're talking about?
Don't ask your wife.
Yeah. I think Ken hit it, is that, you know, study the real railroad to pick up on how industries are laid out, how the track works, and make your railroad believable in size. So if you've got a 6x12 room, don't try to go from Chicago to Los Angeles.
Is that short for Winnipeg to Houston? Is that what you're
after? Yeah. Hey.
I didn't want to rub it in.
Somebody said it.
Yeah.
All right, Joe, what advice would you give somebody?
Well, if you're going to model the Borowski and Southern, you know.
Here we go.
you need to figure out where on earth you're going to plant it. Then look at what rolling stocks, locomotives, buildings, whatever, are available and say, what do I really like? What really makes me say, I like that the best? And then figure out from there what your era is, because you can be ultimately flexible until you start buying things. And the best advice I have is pick that stuff first rather than doing like I did and buy a whole bunch of, ooh, that's cool stuff, and then try and bend your railroad to fit that stuff, because selling it at a flea market at pennies for the dollar is not a good financial plan.
So you're basically saying like pick a date, so then you're kind of narrowed around one spot, which answers a lot of your questions, like what your equipment's going to be and all that other stuff.
Exactly. So your Borowski and Southern will turn out fine if you start there.
I want one of the boxcars.
Yes, you do.
Well, it can't be and S. It's just got to be the Borowski Southern. And
it's
got to be the BS.
Gondola would be best to haul it.
Right. And William, what advice would you give to him?
Well, I think the advice that you can definitely probably run with, especially when picking colors, Mopar had it right when they selected the color for Plum Crazy, because Joe has just mailed it in. Plum Crazy is the official color for Joe's railroad. And I would say, though, from an actual modeling standpoint, is to evolve with what you're doing. If you're freelancing and you're all over the road, you don't have all the ducks in a row per se, you kind of evolve with what you want to kind of start enjoying or doing. If it becomes operations, integrate operations, start to find how your track work needs to be refined, look at a prototype that helps you get you maybe a little bit closer to something that'll function properly. And then on the color side for the Borowski and Southern, if we're going to look at a color, I'm going to probably say it's Pet Chipmunk Brown Turd. I mean, that's going to be the official color of the Borowski and Southern. That's what color is boxcars. If he goes, oh, it's boxcar red or it's boxcar brown, it's not.
It's not.
Pet Chipmunk Turd Brown. So that's
Tamiya
what I tell
X47. What
do you think, John?
Not Tamiya. Tamiya. That'll be good. Okay. All right. Start grip blasting, Joe.
No, it's going to be a shade off. Just
no,
watch.
I think that True Color will come out with that paint next week. Now.
All right, so wrap it up. We're saying less is more. A short story sells a lot better. Correct industries that are proto-based. Simplify your locos and rolling stock. Your colors, your lettering, details, make and model. Think parts, think money. Your map versus the reality of your layout. And the more common you make it, the better it is. And follow prototype standards and no eccentric billionaires. I think that's about it. So that's the key, no eccentric billionaires. So with that, I think we'll all say good night, guys. We'll wrap this one up. Say good night.
Good night, guys.
Yeah, say good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Good seeing everybody.
You've been listening to The Crossing Gate, the official podcast of the Twin Cities Division. You can find us on Facebook in our group, the Twin Cities Division of the NMRA. You can email us at tcdnmra@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and don't forget to subscribe for future podcasts.